Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Thursday, October 29th, 2020. Coming up this hour,
U.S. futures rebound after the worst sell-off in 4 months.
Still, coronavirus infections continue to surge in 41 of 50 states.
Europe imposes new restrictions to stem the spread of the virus.
And it's a big day for tech earnings on Wall Street.
It's good news for some virus hotspots in New York. More on the fallout from Philadelphia's police shooting. Plus, Hurricane Zeta makes landfall in the Gulf. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. A major college football game canceled due to a COVID outbreak, and the Houston Rockets have their new coach.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
And good Thursday morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. And U.S. futures rebounding from yesterday's sell-off. We're coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 26 points this morning. Dow futures up 174. NASDAQ futures up 122. The DAX in Germany is up 0.4%. The CAC in Paris, little changed. FTSE 100 up 0.1%. Nikkei 225 in Japan was down 0.3%, and the Hang Seng in Hong Kong fell 0.5%. 10-year Treasury down 136. Second yield, 0.77%. Yield on the two-year, 0.14%. NYMEX crude oil is down 2.1% on 76 cents at $36.63 a barrel. COMEX gold little change, down 30 cents at $18.78.90 an ounce. The euro, 1.1733 against the dollar. The yen, 104.20. Nathan.
Karen, we'll get more on the markets in just a minute. First, let's get you the latest on the pandemic. Infections continue to rise across the country. The change in daily cases is up in 41 states. And now the timeline for a vaccine is being called into question. According to Dr. Anthony Fauci, a shot likely won't gain emergency use authorization until next year.
We're going to find out from that time in December when at least one and maybe two of the five companies would have put in for an EUA, exactly when the EUA will be granted. Could be January, could be later. We don't know.
President Trump and some health officials had previously targeted next week for a vaccine, but that timeline has been slowly pushed back since the summer as clinical trials hit hurdles.
Meantime, on the campaign trail, Joe Biden continues to assault President Trump's record on the pandemic. He's also criticizing the president's sometimes contentious relationship with health officials like Dr. Fauci.
We can't afford 4 more years of a president who, instead of fighting the virus, attacks doctors. I can't get over this guy.
Meantime, at a rally in Arizona, President Trump turned his attention to Philadelphia, where protests have gripped the city after the killing of a black man by police.
The city of Philadelphia was ransacked by violent mobs and Biden-supported people. These were all Biden-supported people.
No word on whether protesters actually support Biden. The former vice president has condemned the violence in Philadelphia.
As the pandemic gathers strength in the states, it is also surging in Europe. Germany, the UK, Italy, Spain, and Greece all reported record daily cases this week. As a result, stocks in the region suffered their worst day in 4 months. We get more from Bloomberg Markets reporter Mark Cranfield.
The whole European stock sector seems to have been caught a bit off guard here by the second wave of the virus. It doesn't seem to have been well prepared. I guess some investors were expecting it to be a little bit later, maybe deeper into the winter, before there would be a second stage of the pandemic. But it's come a little bit earlier than that, and it's coming as it does at a time when people are a little bit nervous about the US election as well. You throw in this maybe unexpected increase in virus numbers, and it's just too much for the markets to handle.
In response to the surge, Germany and France are imposing month-long restrictions. They're shutting bars and restaurants while allowing essential business and schools to remain open.
Coming up this morning, we get word on the European Central Bank's response to the pandemic. Officials will decide whether to inject immediate support for the economy as businesses shut across parts of the 19-nation bloc. The ECB issues its policy decision at 8:45 a.m. Wall Street time.
Meantime, it is a busy day for corporate earnings around the world. In Europe, shares of Credit Suisse are down more than 3%. The Swiss bank missed estimates. Royal Dutch Shell posted third-quarter profit that beat. It also raised its dividend. And AB InBev reported earnings that also topped estimates. The world's largest brewer was helped by strong demand in the U.S. and Brazil.
Back here in the U.S., big tech is in focus as five heavyweights prepare to report. Ed Ludlow has more from our Bloomberg 960 newsroom in San Francisco.
Just a day after its CEOs faced lawmakers on Capitol Hill over legal protections for user content, Facebook, Twitter and Alphabet will all report third quarter results. Analysts will be looking for signs of a rebound in digital ad spending as brands continue to capitalize on increased user growth during the COVID lockdown. In Apple's case, Wall Street will want to see signs the new generation of 5G iPhone 12s are selling well in a holiday quarter, but expectations are Tim Cook won't give a formal forecast. Amazon's COVID spending will be in focus again as they chase another record quarterly profit. Wall Street is also looking for significant growth in its cloud unit. In San Francisco, Ed Ludlow, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Ed, thanks. Coming up on the economic front, we have a record rebound in GDP on tap. Economists predict a 32% gain for the third quarter after last quarter's historic loss. Here with more is Bloomberg Economics correspondent Michael McKee.
There's little doubt the U.S. will report the fastest quarterly growth rate on record, but the headline will obscure the fact the economy will still be smaller than before the pandemic began. Bloomberg Economics estimates that even annualized growth of 30% or more will still leave the U.S. economy's size almost 4% below its pre-crisis peak. The rate of growth has also slowed significantly in recent weeks. The New York Fed's GDP tracker shows the economy expanding at only about a 3% pace this month. Michael McKee, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Michael, thank you. A big deal to tell you about this morning. After months of contentious talks, the board of Tiffany has approved an agreement to revive its sale to LVMH. The French company will get a $425 million discount from the original price. That ends a year-long saga involving a war of words, government intervention, and legal battles.
And there's word of another acquisition in the works. Bloomberg News has learned Marvell Technology Group is nearing a deal to acquire Inphi Corporation for about $10 billion. The transaction would add to an already record year for chip industry deals.
And a programming note, join us later today for an exclusive interview with Nancy Pelosi. We speak with the House Speaker just 5 days ahead of the election, and that's coming up at noon Wall Street time on Bloomberg Radio and Television. Again, futures are higher this morning. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
All right, Karen, thank you. It is 5:07 on Wall Street. Let's bring in Michael Barr for more on what's going on in New York and around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. New York City police officers were out in full force last night to tamp down any unrest from Monday's police shooting of a black man in Philadelphia. Wednesday was quiet compared to Tuesday night in Brooklyn, where protests turned violent. Meanwhile, Philadelphia police pledged to release 911 footage from police body cameras in the shooting death of Walter Wallace Jr. The shooting prompted protests, widespread vandalism, and an overnight curfew in the city. Mayor Jim Kenney.
It's clear that many of these folks are in no way honoring the memory of Walter Wallace Jr. Rather, they are taking advantage of those who want to peacefully protest Walter's tragic death.
Wallace had a history of mental health problems. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says some hot spots in the state have improved.
Orange County has made very good progress. So have other microclusters, but in terms of changing the restrictions, in Orange County, we're going to change the red zone to an orange zone.
Cuomo says the positivity rate in the virus zone fell from 12% to 2% in 3 weeks, and the rate of new daily hospital admissions has flattened. New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy has issued an executive order requiring public and private sector employers to abide by safety rules meant to protect workers from the COVID-19 pandemic. Next month, all New Jersey employers are required to space workers 6 feet apart and require employees and visitors to wear masks when entering a work site. New York voters could see more changes at early voting polling places in the city. Some New Yorkers have dealt with waiting several hours to cast ballots since early voting started Saturday, including New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio.
People waiting 3 hours to vote is unacceptable. It means for a lot of people, they simply won't be able to give that time. They'll run out of time. They'll have to be at an appointment. They'll have to be at work, whatever it may be. It's another way where we lose the opportunity to encourage people to participate.
De Blasio is calling for the Elections Commission to implement even more changes to make it easier to vote. At least one person has died as Hurricane Zeta slammed New Orleans and much of the Gulf Coast with heavy rains and howling winds. Zeta rapidly also made its way through Mississippi and Alabama. Global news 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. It's coming up to 5:10 on Wall Street. Time for the Burton Accountants and Advisors Sports Update. Good morning, John Stashire.
All right, good morning, Nathan. Three sports leagues completed their seasons all using playoff bubbles that seemed to work. There were no positive tests through the NBA and NHL playoffs. And in MLB, all the way until the eighth inning of the last game Tuesday when the Dodgers learned of Justin Turner's positive test. They took him out of the game, but many wondering why Turner was then on the field celebrating at least some of the time without a mask. Baseball will do a full investigation. The World Series showed why the Dodgers acquired Mookie Betts from Boston and gave him a 12-year contract.
It's been a good year. I mean, it's been obviously a really good year. A lot of positive things that happened. Obviously, you know, a lot of negative things as well. But, you know, you got to take the good with the bad. And baseball-wise, I think, you know, we set our goal and we accomplished it. And So you can't ask for much more than that.
Betts had a double and a home run in the Game 6 clincher. He's now won the World Series two of the last 3 years. The NBA wants to start next season on Christmas. Reportedly, the players prefer to wait a few weeks and start on MLK Day. New coach in Houston, Steven Silas. His father, Paul, was an NBA coach, a great player. Silas had been an assistant in Dallas. Former Knicks coach Jeff Van Gundy was a candidate for the job, a job that he had once before. Daryl Morey was the general manager in Houston. Now he's been named the team president in Philadelphia. Elton Brand will remain GM. The Sixers also have a new coach in Doc Rivers. An outbreak at Wisconsin. The coach, Paul Chryst, tested positive. So did the quarterback. The Badgers, ranked ninth in the country after just playing their first game, canceled Saturday's game with Nebraska. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
John, XFL founder Vince McMahon's agreed to finance the bankrupt Professional Football League's defense in a wrongful termination case brought by former commissioner and CEO Oliver Luck. McMahon's agreement with the league and a committee of its unsecured creditors would give McMahon the right to file any counterclaims on XFL's behalf. The deal still needs court approval. Futures moving higher. This is Bloomberg. And Bloomberg Sports is brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Uncertain about your financial future? Let Burden serve as your trusted advisor and create innovative solutions to help protect you, your family, and your business. Visit BurdenLLP.com.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European stocks and U.S. stock index futures are rebounding from yesterday's tumble. Real estate and technology shares led a broad advance at the European Open, while S&P futures are rising after the benchmark lost 3.5% yesterday, its biggest drop since June. The euro is slipping before the European Central Bank's policy decision, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 28 points, Dow futures up 182, NASDAQ futures up 120. The DAX in Germany is up about 0.7%. The 10-year Treasury down 2/32, yield 0.77%, and the yield on the 2-year 0.14%. NYMEX crude oil is down 2.1%, down 78 cents at $36.62 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.1%, up $1.50 at $18.80.70 an ounce. The euro 1.1736 against the dollar. British pound 1.3008 and the yen 104.23. Today we are watching for the weekly report on initial jobless claims at 8:30 Wall Street time, along with a look at third quarter gross domestic product. At 9:45, it's a Bloomberg Consumer Comfort Index and at 10 pending home sales. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. More than 73 million Americans have already voted either by absentee or by mail. It comes as President Donald Trump and Democratic rival Joe Biden are set to chase votes in Florida. Trump and Biden will appear in Tampa hours apart today. Both nominees are now focusing on encouraging voters to turn out to vote in just 5 days. Hurricane Zeta has weakened into a tropical storm over central Alabama early this morning after making landfall in Louisiana last night. Zeta barreled into the Gulf Coast as a Category 2 storm. There are nearly 1 million power outages across the region. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. It is 5:19 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. The coronavirus surge around the world now has Europe's two biggest economies imposing the kinds of restrictions on their citizens that they haven't seen since early in the pandemic. For more, we're joined from Berlin by Bloomberg's Chad Thomas. Good morning, Chad. Tell us more about the restrictions that are coming in Germany and France.
Yeah, good morning, Nathan. So these restrictions announced last night in Germany by Chancellor Angela Merkel and in France by President Macron. The restrictions are quite similar in the two countries. Basically, they are going to close down restaurants and bars. They're also closing a number of sort of leisure activity type places. Think concert halls, theaters, gyms, places essentially where people would gather and be mingling with one another. Their goal is to try and tamp down the spread. Both countries reporting record cases in the last couple of days, and they're trying to do this while at the same time keeping the economy open. They are not closing down schools at this point, so we'll be waiting to see sort of how this unfolds from here. Both leaders saying that they will reassess in 2 weeks' time where they're at and decide then whether they need to enact further measures.
So besides the schools staying open, how do these lockdowns compare to what Europe saw in the spring? It sounds as though it's just about as stringent as it was early in the pandemic.
It is just about as stringent. I think one of the main differences is that some a few more shops are going to be allowed to stay open than in the beginning of the pandemic, where it was really only grocery stores that were open across Europe. And things like factories are still going to be producing goods. People are allowed to go into offices if you're an office worker, although everyone is encouraged to work from home if they can. So they're basically appealing to people. If you have a setup at home, stay there, but you can go into the office if you need to.
So it does sound as though they're trying to strike a balance to some extent, but obviously they're trying to avoid the kind of economic hit that we saw in the spring. What's the potential economic impact of the kinds of restrictions that are being put into place here on restaurants, on bars, those kinds of businesses?
Well, that's exactly the point. They are trying to thread this needle here because of the huge economic hit that Germany and France and, quite frankly, every country took at the beginning of the pandemic when they had these severe shutdowns. Interestingly enough, Germany, for example, said yesterday that they were going to make another 10 billion euros available specifically only to help these businesses that are being told that they have to shut down, so the bars and restaurants, for example. And that aid is just for the month of November. Right now, it's a one-month shutdown that they're looking at. We'll be, of course, listening also to hear what ECB President Christine Lagarde has to say on this later today when they have the monetary policy meeting at the ECB.
When you look at the chart of how the case counts are unfolding in Europe, obviously the curve is certainly going in the wrong direction here. What's the impact on the health system right now? Are hospitals in Germany and France starting to get overloaded in the similar way that we saw in the spring?
That's a really good point, because as the cases started to go up sort of in the early fall, you didn't see a lot of hospitalizations or people who are in intensive care, and that is now changing. And both Merkel and Macron sounding the alarm yesterday that the health systems are beginning to be overloaded, and Macron basically saying that without strict measures in France that they would not be able to handle the number of people coming into intensive care situations within a couple of weeks' time. So it is really starting to creep up, and you're starting to see more infections in people over the age of 60. Of course, these are individuals who are at much higher risk of contracting a very serious case of the virus. Over the summer and sort of early fall, the caseloads were primarily in younger people, and that's why you didn't see as many hospitalizations here.
Bloomberg's Chad Thomas with us from Berlin this morning as a month-long lockdown on non-essential businesses is about to go into effect in Germany and France. And again, as Chad mentioned, we're certainly looking forward to hearing what ECB President Christine Lagarde has to say when it comes to monetary support in the midst of this next wave of the coronavirus pandemic in Europe. Chad, thanks again for being with us this morning on Bloomberg Daybreak. Here in the U.S., futures are pointing to a higher open after yesterday's steep declines. S&P futures are up 31 points. Dow futures ahead by 203. NASDAQ futures a gain of 140 points. This is Bloomberg. And Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by Withum, a forward-thinking advisory and accounting firm, helping clients to be in a position of strength in the new reality of business. Learn about their innovative solutions by visiting Withum.com.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York.
Bloomberg 1130
to Washington, D.C.
Bloomberg 991
to Boston.
Bloomberg 1061
to San Francisco.
Bloomberg 960
to the country.
Sirius XM Channel 119
and around the globe.
The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com.
This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and we're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures are higher this morning, but off their best levels. That's after the worst sell-off on Wall Street in 4 months. The Dow dropped more than 940 points, while the S&P 500 fell 3.5%. Right now, S&P futures are up about 32 points, or about 1%.
Well, the sell-off's being blamed on a global surge in coronavirus infections that shows no sign of slowing. Here in the U.S., cases are rising in 41 states, and now the timeline for a vaccine is being called into question. Dr. Anthony Fauci says a shot likely won't gain emergency use authorization until next year.
We're going to find out from that time in December when at least one and maybe two of the five companies would have put in for an EUA exactly when the EUA will be granted. Could be January, could be later. We don't know.
The virus also continues to spread in Europe, with Germany, the UK, Italy, Spain, and Greece all reporting record increases in cases this week. In response, Germany and France are shutting bars, restaurants, and non-essential business for a month.
Now coming up this morning, we get word on the European Central Bank's response to the pandemic. We learn whether officials will inject immediate support for the economy when the bank issues its policy decision at 8:45 a.m. Wall Street time.
It's a big day for corporate earnings around the world. In Europe, shares of Credit Suisse are down more than 3% after the bank missed estimates. Nokia shares are down 14% on a sales miss and lower guidance. And Royal Dutch Shell posted third quarter profit that beat estimates.
Here in the U.S., big tech is in focus. Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Alphabet all report today. Let's get more on Amazon from Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
Analysts at Bloomberg Intelligence say a surge in online shopping could continue to fuel sales growth above 30%. Investors will also be watching sales at Amazon Web Services, which could rise above the consensus 28% increase, even after having missed in the second quarter. So far this year, Amazon shares are up more than 70%. Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Charlie, thank you. And deal news, LVMH has agreed to buy Tiffany at a reduced price of about $16 billion. The agreement avoids a legal battle over an earlier deal that's soured.
And there's word of another acquisition in the works. Bloomberg News has learned Marvell Technology Group is nearing a deal to acquire Inphi Corporation for about $10 billion. The transaction would add to an already record year for chip industry deals.
And again, S&P futures up about 29 points. Dow futures up 168 and NASDAQ futures up 135. 10-year Treasury down 2/32, yield 0.77%. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
Okay, thanks, Karen. It's 5:33 on Wall Street. Michael Barr has more on what's going on in New York and around the world. Michael?
Thank you very much, Nathan. This is just coming in right now. French police confirmed at least two people have been killed and several others injured in a knife attack near a church in the Mediterranean city of Nice. The assailant was arrested after the morning attack and taken to a nearby hospital after being injured during his arrest. According to French media, one of the victims was decapitated. President Donald Trump and Democratic rival Joe Biden will be in the critical battleground state of Florida. Trump and Biden will appear in Tampa hours apart today. Yesterday, Trump spoke at a campaign rally in Bullhead City, Arizona.
ABC, Washington Post, they're fakes. Trump 17 down in Wisconsin. 17. Think of it. Think of it. And they tried it last time 4 years ago, too, and that didn't work out too well.
Biden delivered remarks at a hotel in Wilmington, Delaware, criticizing Trump's handling of the pandemic.
This country can't afford 4 more years of a president who thinks he's only responsible for the well-being of the people who voted for him.
More than 73 million Americans have already voted either by absentee or by mail. The U.S. Supreme Court dealt Republicans 2 blows on the deadlines for mail ballots to arrive in battleground states. The high court left intact an extension in North Carolina, while refusing to schedule fast-track review of a GOP appeal involving Pennsylvania. The North Carolina extension lets ballots be received as late as November 12th, as long as they are mailed by Election Day, November 3rd. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says some virus hotspots in the state have improved, like Orange County.
In Orange County, the red zone was at 12% 3 weeks ago. It's now 2%. So that's obviously dramatic progress, and the hospitalization number is flat.
New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy has issued an executive order requiring public and private sector employers to abide by safety rules meant to protect workers from the COVID-19 pandemic. Philadelphia police pledged to release 911 tapes and footage of police body cameras in the near future in the shooting death of a black man with a history of mental health problems. The death prompted protests, widespread vandalism, and an overnight curfew days before Election Day. At least one person has died as Hurricane Zeta slammed into New Orleans and much of the Gulf Coast with heavy rains and howling winds. Zeta roared ashore as a Category 2 storm. Zeta is rapidly making its way through Mississippi and Alabama. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. Almost 5:36 on Wall Street. Time for the Burton Accountants and Advisors Sports Update. Here's John Stanshauer.
All right, Nathan, the Dodgers and Rays both returned home yesterday, leaving the Arlington, Texas bubble that seemed to prevent players from getting the virus right until the end of the last game, where the Dodgers had to take third baseman Justin Turner out of the lineup, having just learned of a positive test. But there was Turner on the field celebrating with his teammates. And in a team picture, he wasn't wearing a mask. Reportedly, he defied instruction to leave the field. MLB says it will do a full investigation. Turner did not fly home with his teammates. Yesterday was a day to dissect a controversial managerial move in Game 6. Tampa Bay's Kevin Cash took starting pitcher Blake Snell out in the sixth inning. He had not given up a run. He had allowed only 2 hits.
Personally, I felt Blake had done his job and then some. Mookie coming around for the third time through. I value that. I totally respect and understand the questions that come with it. Blake gave us every opportunity to win. He was outstanding. They're not easy decisions.
Cash and the Rays rely heavily on analytics. This was the time maybe they should not have. The ratings for the World Series, not good. Games 1 through 4, the 4 lowest rated series games ever. Ex-Met Daniel Murphy will be a free agent. Colorado did not pick up his option. The NFL says Super Bowl 55 in Tampa will have fans, but at only 20% capacity. An NFL trade, defensive lineman Carlos Dunlap goes from Cincinnati to Seattle. So he goes from a team with 1 win to a team with just 1 loss. Dunlap, the all-time sacks leader in Bengals history. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan.
All right, John, thank you. It's 5:37 on Wall Street. Time for the Tri-State Business Report with Bloomberg's Ed Corey.
New York's technology and finance bosses are tempering their expectations for bringing people back to work. Only 15% of office workers are projected to return by the end of the year, according to the Partnership for New York City, which surveyed major employers in Manhattan over the past 2 weeks. Equity Residential has reported a decline in revenue stemming from weakness in its priciest urban markets. The exodus to the suburbs has put pressure on Equity Residential to boost move-in concessions in New York and San Francisco. Those sweeteners averaged about 2 months of free rent. Well, the New York Stock Exchange's top markets cop is leaving the big board for a job advising venture capital firm Andreessen Horowitz on cryptocurrency regulation. Anthony Albanese, who has led the NYSE's in-house regulatory unit since 2016, will join the Silicon Valley firm as its chief regulatory officer. At your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report, I'm Ed Corey.
Thank you, Ed. It's 5:38 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on WHAS in Louisville. Toyota added about 2.6 million vehicles to a recall over fuel pumps.
I'm Steve Potosk, and on 1010 Winds in New York, we're talking about WeWork's new CEO eyeing an IPO again after he turns a profit.
I'm Roger Hearing on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're reporting warnings from scientists that Boris Johnson's virus restrictions aren't working.
I'm Ed Corey on WWJ in Detroit. I'm reporting Ford shares are up in pre-market trading after reporting better-than-expected earnings on Wednesday.
Those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. On the economic front today, we get the first reading on third quarter GDP, and economists are predicting a 32% gain after last quarter's historic slump. Let's get more now from Bloomberg's Vinny Del Giudice.
Second quarter GDP dropped at a record 31.4% pace as the pandemic forced lockdowns. But the Federal Reserve and the government rode to the rescue. And Bloomberg Economics sees consumer spending and business investment driving a third quarter snapback. Fourth quarter growth is projected to moderate, and year-over-year GDP is seen declining. Unemployment remains elevated, and many small businesses are struggling. Vinny Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Vinny, thanks. Some other stories we're following. Shares of eBay dropped 4% in late trading. The company's marketplace growth slowed in the third quarter. It's causing concern that an online shopping boost from the pandemic isn't sustainable. And the oil route won't change one thing. ExxonMobil is maintaining the third highest dividend in the S&P 500. Investors will be paid 87 cents a share. That represents a yield of more than 10%. Because of low oil prices, Exxon is having to fund the dividends with debt. Futures pointing higher after yesterday's steep declines. S&P futures are up 26 points right now. Dow futures ahead by 164. NASDAQ futures a gain of 130 points. This is Bloomberg. And Bloomberg Sports was brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Uncertain about your financial future? Let Burden serve as your trusted advisor and create innovative solutions to help protect you, your family, and your business. Visit burdenllp.com.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European stocks and U.S. stock index futures rebounding from yesterday's tumble. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 27 points this morning. This after the benchmark lost 3.5% yesterday, its biggest drop since June. Dow futures up 172. NASDAQ futures up 130. The DAX in Germany is up about 0.8%. 10-year Treasury down 3/32, yield 0.78%. The yield on the 2-year, 0.14%. NYMEX crude oil is down 3.2% on $1.19 at $36.19 a barrel, $36.19. COMEX gold is little changed at $1878.60 an ounce. The euro, 1.1727 against the dollar. British pound, 1.3014. And the yen, 104.19. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, French police confirm an attacker with a knife killed at least two people at a church in the city of Nice. According to French media, one victim, a woman, was decapitated. The city's mayor described the violence as terrorism. Fast-moving Zeta made landfall slamming into the Gulf Coast as a Category 2 hurricane. At least one person is dead in New Orleans. Hundreds of thousands are left without power in Louisiana and Mississippi. The damaging winds and rain now moving inland, threatening states all the way across the Carolinas and then into parts of the Northeast. President Trump and Democratic rival Joe Biden will be in Florida today. Trump and Biden will be in Tampa at different times. Only 5 days are left until Election Day. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thanks. It's almost 5:49 on Wall Street. Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak on what is going to be a very busy day for earnings in the tech sector. Apple, Amazon, Facebook, Twitter, and Alphabet all report after the closing bell today. For more, we're joined live by Gene Munster, co-founder of Loop Ventures. Great to talk with you this morning, Gene. Let's start with a couple of the companies you're covering this morning. Apple, the consensus for the iPhone maker is earnings of about 70 cents a share on revenue of $63.48 billion. Where are you on that scale?
We'll take the under on that, Nathan, and specifically the timing of iPhone 12 impacts that pretty significantly. I don't think the street's factoring in there. They're looking for 17%, down 17% year over year. I think it could more likely be down 31%. And specifically, as typically Apple has that new version of the iPhone with a couple weeks left in the September quarter. This year moved into the October quarter, into the December quarter, the month of October. And so that has a significant impact. And those final 2 weeks are the most juicy 2 weeks of the quarter. And so it's more like they're losing a month versus 2 weeks. Just given the impact that the phone typically has. And so I'm thinking that investors should brace themselves for what that iPhone number looks like, but don't be disheartened by it, because it really is a timing question versus a fundamental question.
So then is the focus possibly going to be on the longer term outlook for Apple as opposed to the quarterly earnings? And how does that longer term outlook look for you?
It looks good. And yes, the focus is on the long term. I think that what we're going to hear is that iPhone 12 is off to a good start, that they've shown two of the four models so far. And I think that you're going to see iPhone go from essentially flat in 2020 to up, call it 10-12% next year. And so a nice rebound. Separately, Mac and the iPad are just on fire right now. They're up, going to be up about 40% year over year. Just massive reacceleration based on work from home and educate from home. All these are going to have an impact. Services up 15%, all really powerful. So we're still really optimistic.
So is the focus for Apple turning more to its devices as opposed to services as a growth point for them?
Yeah, it is. I mean, services are a big part, call it 20% of revenue, up 15%. But yeah, it's hardware, software, and services, everything, Nathan. And that really is the important point here. When you look at this versus the other tech giants, is the ability to do hardware and software is unique. This is something they've long been penalized for, but it is a positive for Apple.
All right, let's turn to Amazon, obviously a huge performer in the at-home economy. Can the e-commerce giant continue to keep the kind of momentum that it's had over the last few months?
The simple answer is yes. I mean, they've been growing at, call it, 20% plus. Pandemic has been this massive shot in the arm. And I simply think they continue to gain share in what is still a nascent market. Shockingly, if you look at where e-commerce is today, even during the pandemic, it's still only about 20% of what is bought in the U.S. It's slightly less than that globally. And so the simple answer when you think about can Amazon continue is that the addressable market is still significant enough that growth that those growth rates are achievable. I think you're going to hear a lot about them continuing to invest in logistics. And the other piece too here, something else to keep a close eye on, is their commentary regarding the holiday quarter. A lot of the other tech companies aren't going to give guidance. Apple's not going to give guidance. Google won't. Facebook may or may not. But Amazon has some data from Prime Day, which they had a few weeks ago, and that should give them some indication. So what I'm most keenly looking for on Amazon is their commentary on the month of December as kind of a barometer for the rest of the market.
What about their commentary when it comes to the outlook based on the pandemic? Obviously, Amazon has been paid off in dividends when it comes to its performance during the pandemic with people purchasing things from home. But if things start to turn a corner with the coronavirus, could that pose a potential headwind for Amazon?
Every company, the simple answer is it will be a small headwind. It could have a small negative impact on the multiple. Every company that's had this boost because of the pandemic, you think of the obvious ones, Peloton, Zoom, Amazon, all of their growth rates will moderate slightly. I think what's encouraging about Amazon, again, is still the addressable market is massive. It's hard to imagine that there's as much room to grow in broader e-commerce. So, yes, the growth rates may moderate from 20% currently to 15 to 18% next year. But still is going to be relatively, it will still be a quick pace.
Obviously going to be a very busy day for you after the closing bell when Apple and Amazon and all those other big FANG names report after the close. Gene Munster of Loop Ventures, thanks for getting up early this morning for us for a preview. Karen?
All right, Nathan, thank you. It's 5:54 on Wall Street. Now it's time for the Bloomberg Law Report. President Trump losing his bid to have a defamation case against him dismissed. A judge ruled that the government could not substitute itself as the defendant in a case brought by New York Advice columnist E. Jean Carroll. For more on the decision, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks to former federal prosecutor Robert Mintz, a partner at McCarter & English.
So tell us a little bit about the case and why the Justice Department said it should be able to step in for Trump.
That case had to do with an allegation from a New York Advice columnist who claimed that President Trump had raped her in a department store dressing room 2 decades ago. In response to that allegation, the president called her, among other things, a liar and said that she had not been telling the truth when she made those allegations against him. What was interesting about that case is that the Department of Justice actually stepped in to try to take over the defense of the president in that case. The first thing they did was to remove the case from state court to federal court, and then they tried to take over the president's defense, saying essentially that the president was acting in his official capacity when he was denying those rape allegations. The Department of Justice invoked something called the Federal Tort Claims Act, which is a statute that says that when a government official is acting officially in their capacity and in whatever role they have as a government official, that the Department of Justice can defend them. And most importantly, in a defamation case, if there is a charge that a government official defamed somebody and if it was done in their official capacity, then that case essentially gets dismissed because the United States can't be held responsible for intentional tort claims under the Federal Tort Claims Act.
So if the judge had let the Justice Department take over the case, it would have ended the case.
Yes. So were the judge to grant the Department of Justice's motion and agree that when the president denied those allegations that that was done in his official capacity, then the case would essentially have been dismissed. Instead, what happened is that Judge Kaplan, who handled the case, denied the Department of Justice's request and held that the Federal Tort Claims Act cannot be read as expansively as the Department of Justice was asking the court to do here, and essentially said that the president is not in a quote-unquote employee of the federal government for purposes of the Federal Tort Claims Act when he denied those allegations.
And that's Robert Mintz, a partner in McCarter & English, speaking with Bloomberg's June Grasso. Catch more of that interview plus analysis of the latest legal news by listening to the Bloomberg Law Show at 10 p.m. Eastern Time or subscribing to the Bloomberg Law Podcast. And attorneys can find exceptional legal research and business development tools at BloombergLaw.com. S&P futures higher this morning, up 26 points. Dow futures up 160. NASDAQ futures up 123. 10-year Treasury down 2/32, yield 0.77%. The yield on the 2-year, 0.14%. NYMEX crude oil is falling, down 3.3% on $1.26 at $36.14 a barrel. And COMEX gold is down about 0.1%. And Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg.